It's been a long time, but the entire Hardwood Knox team is back. This is Adam Frommel here with Andrew Bailey and Dan Favalli. Andy has been really busy with law school. I've been super lazy, and Dan has been holding down the podcast on his own. I haven't seen your faces in forever, so how are you guys doing?
I still can't see Andy's face.
That's true. Which is depressing. His Skype is pretty broken.
Yeah. I explained to you guys, I sent in this computer to Apple. They fixed a broken screen and sent it back to me with no webcam. And then when I tried to get the webcam fixed, they said, well, now it's past warranty. So fortunately, the soothing sounds of my voice are probably enough to keep you guys at bay for now. I know you'd love to see my face, but this is going to have to do.
You should narrate books on tape. Hardwood Knox
is not sponsored by Apple.
Yeah, that's true.
And now we never will be.
Yeah.
Might have been a pipe dream anyway.
It'd be great if an Apple commercial played right now on Blog Talk, though, as Andy was like talking about that.
That would be perfect. Maybe they'll hear it by some off chance and give me a webcam, though.
I think you're really overestimating how many people we reach with the podcast.
Yeah.
We have like a handful of listeners, at least six.
One of which could be a random Apple employee. So,
or the CEO, for that matter.
Tim Cook, if you're listening, I need a webcam on my computer.
We will plug Apple every podcast from here on out.
Yeah.
Wow, that kind of, that about faced quickly. We will never be sponsored by Apple. We're going to plug Apple for free every podcast.
Yeah, I'll do it.
It's all about keeping an open mind here.
And keeping my face visible.
Don't forget to tag Apple when we tweet this out.
Okay. That's a great call.
So I'm going to attempt a segue here because Apple is clearly not an all-star this year, but we're going to talk about who is in the NBA.
Touché.
That wasn't forced at all, right?
Touché. No. I liked it.
But yeah, so we've seen the All-Star starters revealed for the first time using the combination of fan voting, media voting, and the players kind of voting. Not all of them did. Not all of them took it seriously. And that whole process was kind of a disaster. But does one of you two want to run through who's already on the teams?
Not Kyle Lowry, which is BS. So I think we can leave it at that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we need to know.
I thought I'll go through the East. I thought the Eastern Conference front court picks were like obvious. Jimmy Butler, LeBron James, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. I guess the only wild card in there would have been Embiid, but he was never going to get like the same player popularity he got from the fan vote. And the process got that right, which is no pun intended by saying the process. The backcourt was egregiously bad. Like when we get to this level, we're splitting hairs into quarters. I get that, but of the six guards that were most deserving for starting consideration, Kyrie Irving and DeMar DeRozan were 5 and 6, respectively, and were the ones that got in, which just shows that I'm not even talking about defense, but like just one-dimensional type players, or maybe I don't even want to go that far because of how good DeMar DeRozan is in the pick and roll, but I don't understand how both of them got in over Lowry and Wall, and I even would have put IT and Kemba in front of them as well. I thought that was terrible.
I'm with you 100% on that. I was just thinking the other day, it blows my mind how many people still think DeRozan is the main guy on the Raptors.
It's
just because he's the
numbers.
Leading scorer.
Yeah.
And his
it's crazy to me. That's like my most, that's a revealing take to me in NBA circles. If you are among those who thinks DeRozan is better than Lowry, I'm not sure I can take you seriously on much else.
And the media put DeRozan above Lowry, right? Their votes too. Yep. So like that was, and if we're looking at scoring, Isaiah Thomas's scoring average is now higher than DeRozan's, is it not?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't get it.
I think it's worth noting that like DeRozan and Kyrie are both legitimate all-stars. Like we don't really have gripes with that. It's just, it's like you're saying, it's so revealing what people are looking at. And It doesn't even make sense to me in conjunction with Russell Westbrook, who's leading the league in scoring, not making it in the West. Like, if we're overvaluing scoring for DeRozan, why aren't we also doing that for Westbrook?
I don't get that either. Go ahead.
I had zero qualms about the Stephen Curry pick. I was of the mind in the West Court situation where of the three main candidates in Harden, Westbrook, and Curry, there just wasn't a wrong combination. of answers, because I think you can argue that Stephen Curry is worthy of an All-Star starting slot. And he's probably been better on defense than Russell Westbrook this year, even though we don't take that into consideration. But I guess it is like Adam said, is why are we not overvaluing the same things across the board? But Curry had the fan vote, and he was never going to – because that backcourt was just so tight in general out West, where it had to be those three guys.
And that's the other issue I had with this process, what was happening to pick the All-Stars this year. Like, the difference – Westbrook got like 93% of the media had him on their ballot. And then you had to drop down to like 7% had the third place candidate there. But he only trailed by a small margin in the fan vote. He was third behind Harden and Curry. So why does that tiny discrepancy between second and third count the same as the massive discrepancy between second and third in another category? Like, by only looking at the ranks and not how those ranks were determined, I don't think that it was really accurate.
The NBA almost sabotaged itself by trying to add more meaning to these All-Star selections, because we reached a point when it was just the fans picking where, and it probably still is, but where it was just taboo or not as common a practice to be like, player X needs to be in the Hall of Fame or is amazing because he has this many All-Star selections. But now the NBA has assigned a value to it by including the players and the media members, by saying they don't trust the fans fully to get it right, so that when you do complain about snubs, particularly in the starting lineup, you're going to have bigger qualms. And my other thing was, I don't want to hear the players complain that the media and the fans don't get it right. Like, yeah, if you looked at some of those,
their votes were insane.
They didn't even get a 75% turnout on player ballots, I think I read. And then you're looking at, you know, Trevor Booker getting more votes, presumably from his Nets teammates, than Dwight Howard in Atlanta, who neither deserved to be an All-Star.
Didn't Bryce Johnson get some votes?
Yeah. Chris Middleton got two votes, and he hasn't played this year. He's been injured.
Rondo got a vote.
From Rondo, Zaza probably.
Yeah, that clearly wasn't a Bulls
double
teammate.
Figures votes.
It's just, again, I'm not saying players shouldn't be included, but let's stop with the whole, the media doesn't know, they don't take this seriously enough, and the fans don't take it seriously enough. And at this point, I almost just want to go back to the fan voting, because we can just look at this as, oh, whatever. Because it was really unnerving for me, and I shouldn't like ascribe such a profound value to it, but it was really unnerving to see that the people who were supposed to be in the know most had DeRozan over Lowry. Like, yeah, DeRozan is fantastic, don't get me wrong, but Lowry is just, he's just clearly better than any guard in the East, for that matter, right now.
Yeah, he's been the best point guard for sure.
That was a mini Burns My Bacon.
Did we at any point? I don't think we ever laid out the full West starting five anywhere in there, did we?
No, which is backcourt.
We said Curry and Harden. And I'm on the side of pretty confused that Westbrook isn't starting. And then there's Durant, Leonard, and Davis in the front court, Anthony Davis.
I was glad Davis got it over Cousins. I was worried that there might be a chance he wouldn't.
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't really care either way. I mean, they're both ultra-productive centers on losing teams. I get that Davis has a better, intangibles off the court type stuff than Cousins, with his reputation for technicals and
better defender pouting too,
and things, but
or at least more involved.
Although Boogie's been good on defense this year.
He has like this on-again, off-again interest in playing it that I don't think we've ever, with the exception of maybe the beginning of last year, I don't think we've ever seen that hot and cold, interested, disinterested demeanor from Davis.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's true. I wouldn't have really cared either way if either of those guys had started at the five. I think there's an argument for them, and there's an argument maybe even for a couple of other centers too.
I guess the thing that we lose out most in this All-Star voting by Curry getting in is seeing the chance to have Westbrook, Harden, and Durant start a game together again. Or I don't even know, did they ever start a game together? And someone floated the idea, like, wouldn't it be great if Westbrook just refused the NBA's All-Star invite, like, as a reserve, because he's not starting. So it's like, because putting him and Durant in such close quarters, especially if Draymond Green gets in on the coach's ballot, it just feels like it's going to be I don't know, like that'll just dominate All-Star weekend even if there's nothing there. But then again, maybe that would force them to talk. Could you see, and this wasn't my idea, I saw it on Twitter, but could you see Westbrook being like, nah, I don't want to come?
No, I don't think so. Just because, not, like, as big a deal as we make out of the starters, and I look at that more to see what people are valuing and how they're doing valuing these players. Like, there's no differentiation between starters and reserves as soon as a year has passed.
Yeah, I mean, that's
true. If you look back 3 years and you look at the All-Star roster, are you even going to be able to tell which players started? Or, like, when you're talking about a Hall of Fame conversation, you're saying this guy made 8 All-Star teams. Like, no one says he started 5 of those.
That's a good point. Yeah. And even the guys who are injured and don't go still get that on their resume, right?
Yep.
Which is probably the upside of this new voting process, is because it's like Adam said at the beginning, even though we don't think Kyrie Irving and DeMar DeRozan should be starters, they absolutely should be All-Stars, where if the fans picked, Dwayne Wade probably would have been starting with Kyrie Irving. Yeah.
And Zaza would have been on the team.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, with all the gripes that we might have about the new system, it did keep Zaza out of there.
Wouldn't
which,
that, would
like,
that,
in itself is probably worth it.
Would Zaza have been the most ridiculous All-Star in NBA history?
I'm going to say yes, without like, looking it up.
I'm going to say no.
You're going to say Kobe?
No, Yao Ming.
Oh, he had a year he didn't even play, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
That's and probably,
like,
a good point.
Yao Ming, when he played, actually played at points like an All-Star.
Yes, Zaza doesn't play like an All-Star, but he has at least been an asset for that team. Like, there are enough things that he does well on a team that's going to win 70 games, or at least is on pace to win 70 games. He's been an above-average player. I'm not saying he's an All-Star. He shouldn't even be within sniffing distance of the All-Star game. But it's not like he's some scrub
that was
randomly being voted in. I mean, it would be totally
different
if you're looking
we've ever
at, like,
had, though, because didn't Kobe win the voting when he played like 6 games that one year?
Yeah, that's bad too.
So, like, that would be almost the equivalent of Yao Ming. Like, Kobe was clearly more popular and had the better career, but I'm with Bailey. I think Zaza would have been the most.
I think a lot of people are viewing it as like Mike Scott getting into the All-Star game or some player of that caliber, you know, like a nondescript backup on a mid-level team. Like, he is a legitimate starter on one of the better teams, the best team in the NBA. So I guess I'm not as, like, quite as sour on it. It's still egregious and ridiculous and shows that this process did need to be changed, but I don't think it's, like, out of this world terrible.
If we just look at the phrasing of Dan's joke, though, and we go back to your, like, look at it 3 years from now, those Yao Ming and Kobe Bryant selections probably look a little less crazy than Zaza Pachulia.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're just looking back, like, Zaza Pachulia, one-time All-Star, whoa.
But, I mean, we already have some of those, too. You know,
Mo, like, Williams,
right?
One-time
Mo
All-Star.
Yeah. Kevin Willis.
Was Mo Williams an All-Star?
Yeah, once, right? When he was in Cleveland? Was he a Clipper then? Or was he with the...
No, he was with the Cavs, wasn't he?
Okay.
I feel like this was 2008. I'm gonna fact-check myself here.
Man.
This is going to be one of the most inaccurate podcasts ever because...
2009 with the Cavs.
This is going to be one of the most inaccurate podcasts ever because the new call recorder that I bought doesn't want you to minimize Skype or else it, like, comes in all choppy. So this is all just off the cuff.
That's what I always do anyway.
Yeah.
Right, but normally I'll check things as we're going. Like, I'm just going to throw out numbers and you guys should definitely not bank on that being right.
We'll just double check you.
Russell Westbrook is averaging 50 points per game since December 3rd.
Whoa!
Let's start with Westbrook. He's obviously a lock for all three of us as a reserve, right?
Obviously.
Yeah.
He's still my MVP pick.
I think I'm still going hard on that, but go ahead, Dan.
The MVP is, like, tougher for me this year because I want to pick LeBron still, but... Westbrook is higher up on my ladder than I thought he would be because I didn't think the Oklahoma City Thunder were going to be as good as they are. But he's put them, I think, on course for like 47 victories. And while it's still – that's going to be like a 6 seed or a 5 seed in the West and we're used to these 2 and 3 seeds winning, if you're going to have like a 50-win dalliance on the team that you have after losing Kevin Durant, a top 3 superhuman, for absolutely nothing, he might – He might, oh, him too. I forgot. He might be. Yeah. Although Domantas Sabonis has been hella good. Like, I don't even know if they miss Serge Ibaka that much. But
that team is still atrocious without
him. I was going to say, right. Everything around Westbrook is so bad.
I think he's, and I'm speaking for myself, but I would guess that this is true for a bunch of people. There's a better than good chance he'll end up number one on my ballot by the end of the year, and I did not see that happening. Like, I knew he was going to be crazy. I think we even talked about him averaging a triple-double before the season started. But the Thunder are going to be in the 50-win conversation unless they drop off. Like, if you get them to 47, 48 wins with this roster, again, after losing two of your three best players, that's just absurd. That's incredible. If the Rockets end up having a better record than the Spurs, though, I don't know. That'll be tough to pick against Harden, too.
I think the Rockets could be in for a slight regression. I think they'll still end up like mid-50s to high-50s. But I think we can make a lot of the same arguments for Harden that we just did for Westbrook. Like,
right.
Look at what everybody thought about Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson before they came to play with Harden. Like, they were...
Mike D'Antoni is my MVP pick.
Well, he certainly deserves a lot of the credit, too. And I think he's like the runaway for Coach of the Year right now. But you got to have somebody who can run this. Like... I would almost say that, and I think I will say, Harden is more suited for this than Nash even was. He's just like the perfect D'Antoni point guard, and it's showing in those numbers. Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just going to agree. He's better than Nash. He's like the souped up version of Nash that plays more defense and looks for his own shot.
Yeah.
I really wish that some people would be willing to accept that Harden isn't like the world's worst defender anymore.
Yeah, he's Houston's not
was the problem.
Terrible defensively as a team either. Like, they're middle of the pack right now. One more thing on Westbrook before we move on, because we spent a little bit of time on him. I just looked it up while we were talking. When he's on the floor, OKC outscores opponents by 4.6 points per 100 possessions. And when he's on the bench, they're outscored by 11. So...
Yeah, slight
pretty,
difference.
Pretty big discrepancy there.
Wait, can I have a counterpoint to that, and I know this to be true because I looked it up for an article I did yesterday. LeBron, the Cavaliers experienced the same dip, statistical dip without LeBron James that the Thunder do without Harden.
This season?
Yep.
Yeah. I think I actually just looked that up recently, too. The crazy thing about LeBron is every year we want to like anoint somebody new, but in reality, he's like right there. Every single season, he's a legitimate pick.
It's going to be one of those situations where maybe it won't be as easy to name like the one that he was snubbed for in terms of who didn't deserve it. Like when you look back at those Jordan years, but we're going to look back and be like, damn, LeBron only had four or five MVPs. Like that's absurd. He should have had more if that wasn't clear.
No, I'm with you. So I think for like the sake of continuity, do we want to run through each guy's reserve picks and then just talk about each guy's, or do we want to go pick by pick?
Well, I think let's knock the consensus ones out of the way because we know who everyone's picking. So like we know that Chris Paul would be on there if he were healthy. So we all get to pick an injury reserve. We know that everybody's going to put DeMarcus Cousins and Draymond Green on there. And I think we all had Marc Gasol as well, right?
Yes.
Yep.
So it gets interesting after that. So like for my last three, my two wild cards, I have two members of the Jazz, Rudy Gobert and Gordon Hayward. And then I have CJ McCollum, not Damian Lillard, replacing Paul as an injury reserve.
I have McCollum replacing Paul too over Lillard. I actually put Hayward as a non-wild card in the front court. My wild cards are Clay and Marc Gasol.
My wild cards are going to be Gobert. My injury replacement is going to be Hayward. And I'm saving my wild card for last because it's Nikola Jokic, which threw Dan for a little bit of a loop before.
Who is that?
Starting center for the Denver Nuggets, Nikola Jokic. So since he was reinserted into the starting lineup on December 15th, he's averaging 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists.
Trash.
Shoot 64% from the field, 46 from three. Denver is now in eighth place in the West. In the last couple of months, they have one of the best offenses in the league. And I think we can almost directly attribute that to him now being the full-time starter. Even if we count his time on the bench, which is somewhere he probably never should have been, he's still in the top 20 in value over replacement player this season. I think he's still sort of talked about in basketball corners of Twitter as this like up and coming guy that more people should know about. I am ready to say that he's already an all-star. I don't know if that's crazy, but I'm planting my flag there.
I just haven't heard of this guy.
We've reached the point where it's becoming overrated to call Jokic underrated, right? Like, people know, sure, have to know who this dude is by now.
And he's 16th in TPA, NBA math plug.
Yeah, so we got him top 20 in two, like, catch-all metrics. And so I think a lot of people's argument would be that he's not played enough. But those two, like, cumulative stats say he's already a top 20 player.
How many minutes has he played?
Regardless of the minutes. I think he probably plays, like, let me see real quick, 25 minutes a game? Let me see.
What is that?
25.6. What's that?
Do you have his total for the season?
Yeah, his total minutes would be 949.
All right.
This is my catch-up, too, with Jokic. Because, he's one of my favorite players to watch in the league. And I think that his value goes even beyond what you said, Andy, because it wasn't just them reinserting him in the lineup so much as using him as a primary facilitator. Like, the Denver offense is going to run through almost every possession. They're utterly reliant on his passes to these cutters towards the basket. Every pass that he makes is going to a three or a cut, and it's inspiring everybody to actually move on offense. That offense got really stagnant early in the season, and he's completely freed it up. But like Dan's about to say, the playing time is hard for me.
I'm also just going to piggyback on the pass, because that's like the main reason I want him in is the passing. I just think it's ridiculous for a guy of his size to be this good of a passer. And I don't know if this is still true. I ran the search 2 or 3 weeks ago, but the only other guy in history who had a season with similar rebounding and assist percentage was Bill Walton, like one of the most legendary players to ever play the game. Like we just haven't seen anything like this guy in so long. And sure, he's probably going to be an all-star in a couple years, so he doesn't have to get in right away. But I think just based on the value he's brought already, he's already there.
It's kind of hypocritical of me to detract from the minutes that Jokic just played when Embiid is just so firmly planted in the all-star conversation. But I think what hurts Jokic probably more than it's going to hurt Embiid is how many other deserving candidates there are in the front court. We're in the East. Yeah. I think you can argue that Drummond's been a bit overrated. Hassan Whiteside might have been a bit overrated. Kevin Love's candidacy might be a bit overrated. I don't think you can look at Marc Gasol and Rudy Gobert. Like,
I still have Gasol and Gobert in there, though. Who am I leaving off?
Well, just not going to be that.
I mean, DeAndre Jordan is the one that I'm – what's that?
I guess the other thing, too, is, though, is if Jokic does get in, it will be because – at least one of Marc Gasol and Rudy Gobert did not. I don't think the coaches are going to put like 4 or 5 centers on the All-Star. I would be astounded if they did that. Jokic is clearly a star talent, but picking someone, and again, this comes with the caveat of everything Embiid has done, but picking someone at the halfway mark who hasn't reached that 1,000-minute plateau, if we want to actually peg these All-Star selections as valuable, that volume particularly matters. And again, he's going to be an all-star at some point. He is so good. And what Adam was saying before, it's amazing that that's where the Nuggets are now, considering where they started the season as him being basically their second big. And yet now the offense is entirely dependent on him.
Yeah, I don't think he will be an all-star. I don't think there's any
chance.
You're
such a pot stirrer.
What's that?
You're a pot stirrer. You're like related to Skip.
I think there's the one guy I thought probably deserves to be in there. I mean, I could make a pretty strong argument that he should be in there is DeAndre Jordan.
So
but
good.
Other than that, who else in the front court am I really like?
I would put Karl Anthony Towns over Nikola Jokic for the All-Star game.
I don't know if I would.
I would. He's been so good this year and people just don't even realize it.
I just I just don't know. I don't know if he has as much of an impact on the Wolves as Jokic has on the Nuggets. That's what it comes down to with
me. I guess I could see that argument, but he...
And I don't think that he's like... I think the argument maybe would be that he's better defensively, but I don't know if there's that big of an edge that he has on Jokic on that end.
Karl-Anthony Towns is actually...
And I think Jokic is clearly better offensively.
He's a... Yeah, I guess... Yeah, he's better because of his passing, and Karl-Anthony Towns just isn't there yet, but...
And Jokic, like, around the rim, his post moves and stuff, like, he is so far beyond his age with some of the stuff he does inside.
So is Towns. Like, he's such a smart offensive player. And he's been good defensively. The Timberwolves are just have been a mess for most of the year where they have all this over-helping. And I don't think, one, you're not helping him by playing him a bunch of minutes next to Gorgui Dieng. Two, you're not helping him by playing him a bunch of minutes next to Zach LaVine and Andrew Wiggins, who have been close to hot garbage on that end of the floor. Adam, I feel like, is about to drop a mic.
No, I spend so much time talking about Jokic in person and on Twitter that I'm just enjoying listening to this.
And I think also, we could make the same argument.
If you want to do a Jokic-centered podcast, I have plenty of people that I could bring on.
There you go. Maybe we should save a lot of this for later then. Like I told you guys before the podcast, I realized this is kind of crazy to have.
It's not crazy. I'm not even saying it's crazy. I just think knowing who you would have to leave off this year to get Jokic in there, I just don't think you can justify it, especially when you combine it with the playing time.
Here's the ultimate argument against Jokic's candidacy. I don't have him on my ballot.
That is pretty big. And you are like, you are the Jokic aficionado. Then nobody would dispute that. Let's have you guys talk about CJ McCollum, because you both had him as your injury replacement, which I'm on board with. Like, I'm fine with it. I had Hayward, but I want to hear why you guys had McCollum on there.
It was strictly offense and his shooting, and Adam will probably have more in-depth numbers on it, but he has just been lights out this year, and he's so good. Like, there's a chance, and sometime soon, that he's going to end up being better than Damian Lillard. And you can even see some of those signs on defense. He's not good there yet, but I think when you look at it and you look at his length a little bit and some of the decisions he makes, if he ends up becoming a better player than Lillard on that end of the floor by a comfortable margin, his offense is close enough where you can say McCollum is the more valuable player, McCollum is the better player.
I think it's pretty close already. Go ahead, Adam.
I do have numbers for you. McCollum is taking 2.5 shots per game from between 10 and 16 feet. The league average is 0.82 points per shot from there. He's at 1.01. From 16 feet to the three-point line, he's taking 4.2 attempts per game, which is one of the highest in the league. The league average is 0.802 points per shot there, and he is at 0.968. And then he is taking 6.1 three-pointers per game. League average is 1.074 points per shot on that, and he's at 1.266. There is a serious argument to be made that he's taken over as the best shooter in the league. And I think we got to see that on full display when Lillard was hurt for a couple games, and he just exploded.
I watched a couple of those games when Lillard was out too, and he was like the primary ball handler. I think it might have been the Warriors. I think they played the Warriors somewhere in that stretch. And he was – he has this – it's almost like a big man shot where it's kind of a catapult from behind the head sometimes, and he has this pull-up where guys are right in his face. And I just think there's no – nobody has any business making this shot. And it's just like the same sort of casual walk-up-to-it release that he has with everything. There's like a smoothness to his game, and his shooting is just – it's amazing to me.
I think that we can make a legitimate argument that Steph Curry last season was the best pull-up shooter we've ever seen. And I think that McCollum this year has been in that same category.
Yeah, that's just crazy. Because what Curry was doing last year was unreal and rightfully got a ton of attention. And I'm not sure McCollum's shooting is getting the attention it deserves this year.
The Blazers are that bad.
Well, yeah, I don't think that McCollum and Lillard have a long-term future together.
With the way they play on defense, they can't.
Concern.
The way they play on defense, they can't win with that combination, and they both need the ball in their hands. Like, this isn't a situation like with Steph Curry where we can take someone off the ball and he's still going to thrive. Like, they need to create their own shots. to get in any sort of rhythm. Like, they can both hit pull-up jumpers, but that's not where they're going to thrive.
I actually think they would be fine playing off the ball more than they do now. But I think offensively, there's not a problem. And I thought that's what the Blazers were thinking when they signed Evan Turner.
It's not a problem, but I think it can get even better.
What can get even better?
Like, both of them would be even better without the other there. Not just scoring more points
per game. I think you can argue if you took one of them off offensively, like, there might be a drop off. But it's like the defensive concerns are bigger. And I think the argument on offense is you can probably end up making a lateral move offensively by keeping one of them and trying to trade the other one, which is something they're going to have to look at over the summer when McCollum's extension kicks in and he could be sent out as more outgoing salary on the books. But they won't get rid of Lillard, I don't think, the Blazers. But I do think, you know, if we're going to look like 1 or 2 years from now down the line, this might be more of a conversation where, wow, McCollum ended up being a better player than Lillard.
So I think we let's run through each of our picks real quick, just as sort of a recap. I had Westbrook, Chris Paul, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Marc Gasol, Rudy Gobert, and Nikola Jokic, and then Gordon Hayward was my injury replacement for Paul.
I had Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul, with McCollum replacing Paul. Marc Gasol, DeMarcus Cousins, Draymond Green, Rudy Gobert, and Gordon Hayward. And I think that we also need to have a Utah Jazz podcast at some point, because Hayward and Gobert deserve some serious attention, and we just don't have the time with them today.
Yeah. One of them better make it.
It would be pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, I can absolutely see a situation where, like, DeAndre Jordan and Klay Thompson are going to get in instead of them, which would be such a travesty.
Yep. I'm, like, bracing myself for it.
I think Gobert belongs above any of the big men except for DeMarcus Cousins this year.
Same here. I think he's in the conversation for best center. Anyway, go ahead, Dan.
I have Russ, CP3, and then McCollum as his injury replacement. Then I have DeMarcus Cousins, Gordon Hayward as a non-wild card reserve. Draymond Green, who didn't get enough all-star attention, I think, when you looked at all the voting from fans, media, and players. And my wild cards are Klay Thompson and Marc Gasol, who has been absolutely terrific this year.
And just a quick note, I think that we all have Chris Paul in there because the timing of an injury should not affect the All-Star candidacy. If that had happened a week later, then he would have been in.
Yeah. He's been – his numbers again. He's been incredible. Like, top 5 point guard still, even with the way Westbrook and Harden are playing. Like, his just – like, value type numbers are still right near the top.
It's amazing how over the past 3 years or so, maybe 2 years, he's almost become underrated because the conversation just revolves around Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook, and now this season, James Harden.
Chris Paul is the best point guard of all time.
Yeah, I'd be willing to say that.
Yeah, he's definitely got a very strong argument.
Hopefully I just upset a lot of people. People are listening to us. I'll take Chris Paul over anyone.
The East, we don't really have.
We were chalk with each other, right? We all had the same picks. Yeah. Derrick Rose in the backcourt.
Dennis Schroeder. I think we all have like relatively the same picks with like one conversation. Everyone has Kyle Lowry and John Wall and Isaiah Thomas and Kemba Walker and Paul Millsap, and then it comes down to Paul George, Kevin Love, and Joel Embiid for that last spot.
Okay, so
I'm going to throw in somebody else too once we sort that out.
If you're throwing in Jokic, you better damn well be throwing in Kristaps for that conversation.
No, sorry, Dan.
Does his last name rhyme with torture?
Yes, it does.
Yes.
So maybe we should just make it a 4-person conversation. Paul George, Joel Embiid, Kevin Love, and believe it or not, I was really torn, and I had Otto Porter in there for a little bit before I switched Joel Embiid into his stead.
Okay, so we have, as the backcourt, like, surefire reserves, we have Lowry and Wall, all of us, right?
Yeah.
Those are our two picks. And then for the wild cards, we all have Kemba Walker and Isaiah Thomas.
Four point guards.
It probably helps that there's a chance. I originally thought they wouldn't carry 5 point guards on the All-Star roster, but I think you can look at Irving as more of a combo guard or a glorified shooting guard. So I have hope that we'll get that right. So the front court is the only place we have a real discussion.
And Millsap's along.
Millsap is in, yeah.
Yeah. He better be.
So let's start with Joel Embiid, which the obvious argument for Embiid is that he just hasn't played enough, which, as you guys pointed out with Jokic, I think it's totally fair. I want to see how many total minutes he has.
I think it's under 8.
I think the difference between Embiid and Jokic, and I think that Jokic is having a superior season, but the All-Star game isn't just about how good these guys have been. It's also about the excitement levels and who people want to come see play and all that. And like for everything that Jokic has done for the Nuggets, Embiid has been just as important to Philadelphia's success. They're actually a competent team when he's on the court. And beyond that, he's invigorated like a national movement. Nobody really cares about Jokic outside of Denver and the NBA writers circle and the super fans, but everybody is on board with this Embiid stuff. I mean, he did end up beating Kevin Love in the fan vote, I think.
Here's what I was against. I called his All-Star case overrated because so much was built off his clever social media campaign. I won't deny that it was amazing. But if we're going to talk about these selections as meaningful, and if we're still going to use All-Star selections as contract incentives for players, the volume to me matters. And again, he's not just under the 1,000-minute plateau. He's under the 800-minute mark. He doesn't play on both ends of back-to-backs. He's never played in 30 minutes and played 30 minutes in a single game. His minutes cap is going to be in effect for the rest of the season. But what ultimately swayed me, and I think this was probably until last night, what swayed me is that the Sixers post a top 8 net rating with Embiid on the floor and then just go back to the worst team in the league by far when he's off.
It's like I just looked it up. It's
top 8. Could we sit there for
about the same as Westbrook's, like the swing between on and off.
And again, the on-off stats are so imperfect, but like with the Sixers, like it's the Sixers. And we can talk about
how bad Westbrook's supporting cast was. Like, look at Embiid's.
Right. And they've been so good defensively. They have the best defensive rating in the East over the last 30 games. I think it's helped that he got Nerlens Noel back in that stretch and started using him because he really does serve as this nice defensive bridge. But, like, Philly's supporting cast is just mostly underdeveloped crud. And a top 8 net rating with Embiid on the floor. And when you're looking at a 700-plus minute sample size in that context, it's like, whoa. And he's a rookie. Granted, he's been in the league for 2 years, but he hasn't really played basketball over the last 2 years. I can't get over the top 8 net rating. Like, that just still blows my mind. And you're beating a team like the Raptors when you're at home, and you've turned Philadelphia into this home court advantage, and like the crowd is just so pumped up, it's ridiculous. That's what ultimately swears.
They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, and they're only 5.5 games out of number 8 in the East. I don't think they are out of the playoff picture yet.
It's crazy. Who could you imagine that's ahead of them falling behind? Knicks, definitely. I'm just saying, they might come closer than we think because the Magic are ahead of them, and I don't know that that'll necessarily
stay
that way. I think
there's a good chance they finish ninth, but like, the Pacers and the Hornets and the Wizards aren't going to drop out, and they're not going to pass the Bucks.
I think the Pistons are going to turn it around.
Even the Bulls might be iffy territory for them.
Yeah,
the Knicks and the Magic or whatever.
Realistically, I think the ceiling is 10 or 11.
10? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's
like, still. Yeah. These are the Philadelphia 76ers that we're talking about.
Yep. To go from like historical joke for the last 3 or 4 years to 10th place would be quite the jump. We all like ended up leaving him in. I have him on mine.
I had
a late switch to put him in instead of Porter.
Porter has a case, though.
I have Paul George and Joel Embiid as my last two.
So do I.
Same here.
Oh, so we
all ended up. So let's try to make a case for Love and Porter then.
I mean, you can make the case for Love is easy, but like, I mean, he's the number 3 option. He's averaging a double-double.
Yeah.
It's just
on the best team in the East.
He's also anchoring a lot of bench units that don't involve LeBron and Kyrie, which is huge because in the past the Cavs have fallen off when the superstars aren't on the court. And because he's been so good in that role as the alpha guy, they've been able to stagger minutes more, which is huge.
He's also been able to figure out a way to stay on the floor when the Cavaliers are playing their best players against tinier lineups, which is a boon. I think, personally, I'm just more gravitated toward these guys who are having, even though that's not, I guess, what the All-Star game is about when you look at how it's played, but the players who have these big impacts on both ends of the floor. And Kevin Love, even when he's a he's a defensive wash at his best, or maybe a little bit of a plus when he's really locked in, but you just look at Paul George and Millsap and even Embiid, and their play on that less glamorous end really tips the scales in their favors for me.
Yeah, I think I'd take George too for pretty much the same reasons. I think for me, it's like, where would the Pacers be without Paul George as opposed to where would the Cavs be without Kevin Love? Like, the Cavs would be worse, but they still have LeBron and Kyrie. I just feel like Paul George is, he's still a superstar and he's more important to his team than Love is to his. It comes down to kind of like an MVP conversation. Go ahead, Adam.
My important update is that I'm recording this on a table where my wife is working on a big puzzle, and I just found the last edge piece because it was sitting right in front of me.
Well done.
She's going to be pissed that you put the corner piece in, though?
It wasn't a corner. It was just an edge one that finally connected the entire border.
Oh, wow.
So, well done. It's been, I don't know how it took me 59 minutes into our recording to find it.
Just
but,
been staring at you the whole time.
I'm totally paying attention.
let's talk about Porter then. Because I think that would probably throw people for a loop, too. He's like comfortably the second best player on the Wizards now, right?
Yep.
I think he's closer to being the first best than he is the third best.
Which is, that's interesting.
I'm not saying that he's better than Wall. I'm not saying he's more valuable than Wall, but I think the gap between he and Wall is smaller than between him and Beal, because Porter has been so good in his role. He's been a lockdown defender. He's been a plus rebounder. He's been the best spot up shooter in the NBA. He doesn't create for himself much, but like if you hit him in the chest with a perfect pass, he's gonna make the shot every time.
He also, while he doesn't create his own offense, I think entering that win over the Knicks last night, he was shooting 56% on drives, which is ridiculous.
Well, I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
so, I mean the good thing for Porter here is that even if we leave him off the All-Star team, which obviously is going to be devastating that he doesn't have enough respect from the three of us, he's going to get a max contract this summer.
Yeah,
because if the Wizards don't give him one, the Nets are going to throw him a max deal as a restricted free agent.
Yep. The Nets are probably going to throw max deals at KCP and Otto Porter at the same time and hope that – but they're both being
that would be so much fun.
it's amazing – you worry, though, is this, contract year Otto Porter or something? But he's always shown flashes. But they were at the beginning of the season.
He doesn't strike me as a contract year guy, though, because he's always had such a high motor.
He's steadily improved,
each year he's been in the NBA.
But the past 2 years that we've entered in the preseason, not necessarily we, but, the basketball sphere wondering, is he really the answer at the 3 and 4 for them? Is Markieff Morris better? Is Kelly Oubre Jr. a better option? And he definitely put that conversation to bed, but he's had kind of awful preseasons. I think he was pretty bad this preseason as well, but you're right. His stats have steadily improved since he entered the league, in terms of efficiency and minutes and everything. It's just all trending in up direction.
Another great litmus test for how much you've been paying attention to the league this year is asking people if you think Otto Porter or Carmelo Anthony are better right now.
Yeah,
because the answer is very obviously Otto Porter. Sorry, Dan. Dan is trying not to cry.
I mean, it's not wrong. If you need someone to create their own shot, Melo might still be the pick, but that's the extent of his edge. Here's the thing too is that what I was going to say about Porter, where you were saying the gap between him and Wall is smaller than the gap between him and Beal. I don't disagree. I actually agree, but it's weird to say that Beal would probably be better without Wall than Porter would. Because he's so good in his role, but his role is so dependent on Wall. But to that point, and the Carmelo Anthony thing triggered this, that's kind of what you want, is those guys built around those drivers and those explosive point guards. Like Carmelo Anthony's offensive game, even people look at him now and are like, man, he's best as a spot-up shooter. Like, we don't need him pounding away in the post or in isolation or shooting these long twos like he still does, or ruining our crunch time offense, which he still does. Sorry, that was off topic.
And I think it's also worth noting that we're not trying to put Brad Beal down. Like, this is very much a compliment to Porter. Beal's having a great season. He's become probably one of the best offensive shooting guards in the NBA, not just the Eastern Conference. I think that you could have him as a fringe all-star candidate.
Yeah.
But Porter has just been that much better.
The defensive gap between those two is where it's really just enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something we haven't talked about with Porter. He's a really good defender too.
He's allowed the Wizards to play, I don't want to use the word small, but he's allowed the Wizards to like field these stretchier lineups when they're not really built to do that the entire game. And part of that is Scott Brooks has gotten to the point where he just ignores his bench because it's just awful. But
yeah, they've got a terrible bench.
He's helped them, like, even when they got Markieff Morris, you were like, are they going to be able to play these, like, four-out lineups? And Otto Porter's just made sure, like, that's not even an issue. Like, they can do that for the entire game. Jabari Parker had an interesting case. I'll also
Jabari say. Parker is probably the biggest snub on my list, besides Kevin Love.
I'm glad you brought him up.
I might have Porzingis as the biggest snub just ahead of Parker, but they would be right in the... I was happy to see, I think it was the media and the fans gave, well, I don't know what the final tally was for the fans, so I shouldn't speak, but Kristaps might have had more votes from the fans and media than Carmelo Anthony, which is just, I guess it's irrelevant,
that
but,
is
it,
good.
But it also shows like, hey, people realize that Kristaps is
the best
Knicks
player on that team.
Player.
Yeah. Yep.
This is some good awkward silence. No one had anything else to say on Jabari.
I think this is a good stopping point for our All-Star conversation.
Which I guess that would mean it's time for...
Bacon! Where's the bacon? I smell bacon! Bacon! Gotta be bacon! Only one thing smells like bacon! That's bacon!
Yes, that's right. Burns My Bacon is back after an incredibly extended hiatus because I don't think we've done it over the last few podcasts. Bringing us back in to the Burns My Bacon fold will be Mr. Adam Frommel.
We just saw the Baseball Hall of Fame voting results announced, which means it is time for my annual gripe about how that is done. A, it's ridiculous that the writers who select these players are limited to only 10 selections. They should be allowed to pick as many as they want. A lot of them did use all 10 selections. I think the average was like 8 used, which is higher than it's been in the past. And beyond that, I don't think that the PED guys should be seeing their vote totals depressed so much, because it is not the Hall of Good People. It is the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame should have the all-time home run leader in it, regardless of whether he juiced or not. It should have Curt Schilling in it, regardless of whether he used ketchup on his sock or if he was really bleeding during the World Series game, and regardless of what a vile human being he is. It is not the Hall of Good People. Ty Cobb is in the Hall of Fame. Cap Anson is in the Hall of Fame. We've seen plenty of people who were against the segregation movement, or who were for the segregation movement and against the civil rights movement, that are still in these venerated positions within the sport of baseball. And to keep out these people because you don't agree with what they did because you think they cheated during an era where everyone was cheated is disingenuous. It takes away from the people who are going there to see the history of the sport.
I agree 100%. And it's like, there are a lot of questionable characters in the Hall of Fame. And I especially agree with your last point that you basically just have to black out an entire era if you're going to say that PED guys can't get in, because it was everywhere during that phase.
And we're not even keeping out the people who were confirmed steroid users. It's the people who are suspected steroid users as well.
Yeah.
Some nice.
Like, I'm not supporting cheating. That's not the point. Like, I think that Barry Bonds is a scumbag. I don't like Curt Schilling at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's not the argument. I'm with you 100% on this.
I agree with you guys. So that's my only input on there. I don't. I'm not pro cheating, but at this point, like with baseball going the way it is, like guys are gonna use steroids, and that's what they're gonna do to their bodies in that sport. Like, you know, whatever. Okay.
I think what we've come to definite consensus over the course of this podcast is we hate like all sorts of voting results in sports or voting processes, whether it's NBA All-Star, Hall of Fame,
the Electoral College.
There's just all kinds of issues going on with voting right now. If you want to talk to us about any of that or about our...
Please not voting results.
About our votes for the reserves, which were 100% correct. You can get at us on Twitter. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. Adam is at Frommal09, F-R-O-M-A-L-09. Dan is at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. And the show is at Hardwood Knox, which Dan has diligently tried to resurrect recently. So hopefully we can get that thing cooking again. He just made a stink face. So
diligently might be a little bit.
Well, more diligent than either one of us was, that's for sure.
Yeah, I forgot the password.
So as always, thanks for listening. Please subscribe on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio or wherever you get the podcast. Leave us a rating if you'd like, that would help. We leave this podcast as we always do, or as I hope we always do,
we have
with a shout out
really.
To Beno Udrih, who I believe is on the Heat now. Like as I said, I don't even know exactly what he plays for.
No, he's not.
He's on the Pistons.
Yeah, he's on the Pistons.
Oh, my God.
He follows us on Twitter, Bailey. You can't just be getting stuff
his
wrong.
His haircut is fantastic, too, so you should watch Pistons games for him.
I have actually seen the haircut. He's got, like, the shaved sides and the thing pulled back now, right? And
apparently bleach. The next episode needs to be a who he play for with Andy.
I guarantee that'll be the only one I miss. It just happens to be the guy that I shout out at the end of it.
Right, that's why it's so bad. Is that that's what you meant?
I honestly, Pistons like wasn't even in the deepest corner of my mind right
you,
there.
You just trashed the validity of this entire podcast by giving your shout out to Beno Udrih.
Oh, the shout out is the most valid part and will remain so.
I hope.